Quack, quack, quack.
Hey, you know, I've noticed the, if you may digress right from the start here, I notice a growing trend, straws in the wind department, that today, instead of people disagreeing with each other, in other words, if somebody says, I disagree with this guy and this is the way I feel about the subject at hand, I've noticed a very interesting change that's come about in the last, I'd say, 6 months. Fascinating change. Now, I see this in letters, because thousands of letters will come in over the place, over the space of a month, you know, and you can see curious trends drifting in and out of letters. And I noticed one interesting trend, that today, if you disagree with somebody, you know, if you give out an idea that he does not agree with, or you do not agree with his idea, instead of disagreeing, this is another of the guy saying, well, all right, you disagree, but that's the way I feel about it, and this is why I feel this way, and I'm going to argue with you about it on that basis. And no, you know what's happened now? Guys write and will accuse you of not having the intellectual capacity to understand the subtle thing, which, of course, they're a total master of. Curiously enough, many of these letters are badly misspelled. Use the kind of English that often has trouble getting through a third-grade theme paper. But this is the new trend. You never concede that there's two sides to your issue. There's only the right side and the side that is held by the slobs, which, of course, is obviously a slob world. And that's a new trend. I'm just reporting on it here for the, you know, for the premises of reporting for the premise. And in keeping with the premise that we should report occasionally on straws in the wind and the intellectual world in which we live. And we do live mostly in the world of the intellect. Our world is almost all in our mind. Whether it's Watergate or whatever it is, you just heard about this thing. You haven't been involved in it. So it's all, I hope you haven't. So it's all, although I'm beginning to doubt, I think everybody is looking. But the trend that I've noticed now is that you'll get these letters. Like one day I did a show about the occult, which, you know, point I was making a point that the occult is another sign among many, by the way, leading practitioners of the art of cataloging the history of man's ideas. Another sign in the wind, another little straw that we are returning to a curious kind of medievalism, is the growth of the occult. Oh, this infuriated a lot of people, who said obviously Shepherd did not have the intellectual qualifications to understand the ramifications of, say, astrology. And it's curious that the little old ladies who can't write their own names seem to understand it, but this is a trend in our time. You never say that a man disagrees with you. In fact, one guy incidentally, this is so funny, one guy wrote a review. He's a sophomore in a local school, local school which does not have particularly high intellectual standards in itself, but he's a sophomore, and he wrote a review on Ferrari in the Bedroom, my newest book, and he really got angry. He said that Shepherd discussed issues that he has no intellectual background to discuss. Well, he doesn't even know. Which, meaning, of course, that's part of that trend. Naturally, he does have the intellectual background. Being a well-known sophomore, he does have the intellectual background to discuss these weighty subjects with complete confidence and total understanding. Now, this is a trend that I've noticed that is beginning to even be found in places that you would be surprised that it is found. But that, you know, that's all. I don't know how I got on that. But it is a strong wind. And I think one of the things that people should do who are in the arts, whether they be writing or performing or painting or making movies, is to catalog and report on the changing moods and attitudes of any given time that they live. And I think this is one of the most important changes in our time, is the general intolerance that people feel for other people's ideas, which may be diametrically or not even particularly diametrically opposed to their own. Great intolerance. But the minute, and this is a new kind of intolerance. We've kind of outlived racial intolerance. Racial intolerance is, by and large, a thing that's beginning to, thank heavens, is beginning to slowly slip out of our problems. And even religious intolerance is beginning to slowly slip out. But idea intolerance is growing rapidly. So I'm beginning to come up with Shepherd's own irrepressible intolerance factors theory, which means that intolerance is part of man's makeup and it will always be there. But it changes form depending on whether or not that particular form is unfashionable at this time. So racial intolerance is very unfashionable today, you'll agree. So you find very few people coming out loud with racially intolerant ideas. So it's not done. Another kind of thing is religious intolerance is not really in style any longer. It used to be big back around the turn of the century. It's not really, and I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm saying to express those ideas is now kind of out of date. Unless it happens to be certain religions, you could not get away with saying much about the Catholics or Jews, for example. But today it's very easy to say anti-WASP things, and I'm none of the three. I mean this kind of thing just keeps bouncing back and forth. What I'm really saying is that intolerance seems to remain at a fairly consistent level. It just changes from time to time. It changes its hue and complexion and its subject matter. And so today, the growing intolerance is for other people's ideas. Now, and their ideas that are remote, say, from the world of politics. That's always been true. So don't think I'm talking about somebody else who's got another idea of political. No, it's not politics at all. We're talking about ideas that relate to existence itself. So if you believe in the occult, that's very fashionable today. It's fashionable. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's philosophically indefensible. It's fashionable. And so now today, we have to believe in this. If you don't believe in it, you better keep your mouth shut, because what will happen is that you will be accused of being being intellectually incapable of understanding these vast concepts, which the peasants of the fields of Middle Europa 200-400 years ago was very cognizant. He understood these things. Somehow you can't. Well, this is part of the changing moralities and the changing intolerance. Changing intolerance does not mean it's losing its value, intolerance. Intolerance is part of man's makeup, is what I'm saying. And so there are all kinds of intolerances. We tend to use the word intolerance as synonymous with race. But intolerances are very subtle and can be as deadly in areas. For example, there's an age intolerance in our country. An age intolerance. That any time anybody is over 35 in this country, he's somehow not as valid a citizen as one who is under 35. Now, that would never occur to a lot of people as being intolerant, because a true intolerant thought is considered not to be intolerant, but merely a statement of an obvious fact. Now, you go to many... Have you ever been around a real racial bigot? Oh, I have been. And a real racial bigot does not understand that what he's saying is intolerance or bigotry. He will say to you, well, it's a fact. I mean, everyone knows. Everyone knows that there are many races that simply do not have the ability to do the things. Now, I don't have anything against them personally. Now, remember that. I'm not talking here about not hating a guy because of his color. I don't do that at all. I'm talking about, let's just get right down on the table, let's state an obvious fact. Well, see, he does not consider what he's saying an example of bias or prejudice, which denotes opinion. I don't know. It's a statement of an obvious fact. And so today, In our curious types of intolerance, one of them is the age intolerance. And so many a kid will say, well, let's face it, man, it's a fact. You know, anybody over 35 just don't understand, right? He's not going to be able to understand these things. So he does not realize that he's talking intolerance. And it's a matter of opinion. But it's a fact. He believes this is a statement of fact. And so, again, right away now, I'm going to deluge with letters proving that I am incapable of understanding why this is so. This is a fact. So every time you go against the intolerance of your age, of your time, you will be accused of being totally out of it. And that is one of the great fears that man has always had, being out of it. This is one of the reasons why a lot of otherwise sane people in Germany, for example, in the 20s, went along with what was going on in their time because they, quote, didn't want to be out of it. They didn't want to be put down by everybody around them who seemed to have thought this all out. You know, they really know what it's about. So obviously, I must be the one who's wrong. And so intolerance is a very subtle thing and is a constant, I think. It's a constant. That the intolerance, by that I mean everybody, it's just a theory, and again, I can be proven wrong. Not really proven wrong, because a theory is a theory. It's not I'm not stating a fact, as most people think they are when they come out and whip another philosophical concept on you. They'll do it as a fact. Why? Everybody knows that, so, and so on down the line. But it just seems to me that intolerance, as the case with many of the other things that go to make up the very subtle and highly complex human personality, is pretty much a constant. That man will shift his focus of intolerance from time to time, depending on what fashion of the period calls for. But his intolerance level in all races, classes, and in all ages remains constant. So it's not I'm not saying that intolerance is, see, and of course what happens is that if a man has a certain set of intolerances that he has with him, he carries with him, and the fashion changes, and he doesn't shift his intolerance, he will then become truly out of it. He will be walking around mouthing last year's intolerance. and he'll be confused by this year's intolerance, and it would be very confusing to a man, say, like Thomas Jefferson, a man of his period, to hear some of the intolerances of our day, because he lived in a day of different types of intolerance. And Jefferson, hearing people say, "Well, that man is obviously, he's an old man. Why should he run for this office? He's old." This would confuse him. He would say to you, "Well, you mean he can't think well? He's senile? Is this what you mean?" He'd say, "No, he's old." and that would confuse him, because in his day, age was considered a thing, in many real senses, a positive virtue. That the more a man was around, the more experiences he had, and since he had more experiences, the theory was that he would be able to judge the problems inherent in a situation as it develops. So that was a different view. This is WOR New York, if you're curious. And I suspect you may be. Well, let's see. We have a little commercial dingling here. Let's see. Brack. This is an official one. Savers. That implies a lot about my listener types. I have never known a listener of mine who saved anything. As a matter of fact, they're the ones that need saving. How many times have you collected a dividend on your savings in 1973? Well, only once, okay. Well, Provident, New Jersey's oldest mutual savings bank, will pay its savers their fifth dividend of the year on May 31st. Now, while others pay dividends every 3 months, Provident Savings Passbook Savings accounts are credited with a dividend on the last business day of each and every month. So there's no point in being a 90-day waiter. Get your savings, your deposits and all that is up to date all the time. So if you want to find out about it, write to Provident, care of says me. Guess that's one of these new Chinese performers we got, M.E. Provident, care of me, WOR, New York, 10018. and they're a member of the FDIC. Now, let's see. Well, this is the kind that's going to make you worry, man. Do you know that inside of you, a fantastic machine is running day and night? Constantly running. A little machine there with cogs and wheels going around, and that machine needs spectacular food and stuff to keep it going for 150, 300 years, however long you intend to live. We'd like to suggest that one of the most important parts of that machine is the water you drink. Mountain Valley water from Hot Springs, Arkansas, is considered superb water. In fact, it's been popular for over 100 years. And you know, some of the people who began drinking it very earliest years are reputedly still alive and walking around, betting on the horses. So you will find Mountain Valley water is exactly right for you. It's especially good when it's mixed with the right stuff. For a free folder and price list, or to have Mountain Valley water delivered to you, you just get in touch with WOR here and write WAR on your card with two T's. They'll know that you're one of my listeners. Or telephone New York, Bryant 95252, if you'd like to find out what the real story is. And if you can't stand water, here's something else.
Hey, guess who was in here yesterday? Wally stumbled. You know, little fellow runs a grocery store in the corner. Well, Wally drops into his regular Ballantine beer, and you know what? Seems his amnesia's come back again. Connery says it's bad this time, real bad. I've forgotten how to make change. Can't seem to remember anything. And I say, Wally, Benny's not as bad as you think, and I'm going to prove it to you. I'm going to describe a familiar object, and you're going to tell me what it is, okay? Now, what's terrifically refreshing has three rings on the label and is chock full of purity, body, and flavor. Well, Wally thinks about it a while. Don't tell me, he says, I can get this. Finally, he says, Connor, it's one of two things. Them little packs of yogurts or some kind of bird. And there he was with a bottle of Ballantine beer right there in front of him. So I say, Wally, that's close enough. Looks to me like you're coming out of it. Some world, huh? Here. Let me get you another Ballantine. On the house.
Okay. You can see that there's an indescribably moving talent on that. Ballantine Bock beer is now available, friends. Comes from Falstaff Brewing Corporation, St. Louis, Missouri, and other colorful places around the country. Hey, a good suggestion here. You drink a lot of that Ballantine, get all beered up, and then go out to the spring meet at Freehold Raceway. It's coming into... Oh, am I talking about sin here? It's coming into the final stretch. You have from now until June the 2nd to get out there and get rid of all that extra dough you've got. Don't miss it. Come out and have your day in the sun. 11 exciting harness races every afternoon and 10 exactas. What the hell is an exacta? Always sounds to me like a bad cigar and a daily double. But nevertheless, Freehold Raceway, Freehold, New Jersey, they close the starting gates of the season after the 11th race. That's it. Saturday, June 2nd. Post time, 1:30 p.m. Come on out. But I got on this subject because I've been hearing a changing tenor of intolerance that's been slowly rising. For one thing, let's face another thing too. We're living today in the age of, in a sense, the ascendancy of the loudmouth slob, who is beginning to be a big deal in many certain areas. And he's becoming a TV commentator. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's intellectually incapable of understanding the concepts. The guy who just has a loud voice, who parrots whatever is popular at the time, will become a very big man in any given period. And people in subsequent times will wonder why people followed that guy. Well, you'd have to understand the intolerances of the period in which he worked. Then you'd understand it. And even then, to understand them is not to hold those views. To hold those views would even be more valid. And so it's difficult for somebody who did not live, let's say, in Germany in 1928. It is difficult. It's impossible for anyone to understand why Hitler made sense to the people of his country at that time. You go to Germany today, and they don't even know. You know, the people who've lived subsequently don't even know why in the hell that was why people dug it, and it's difficult to understand. It's like It's like almost any other kind of a populist movement. It is popular. And what does the term pop mean in music? Well, it's just popular. And it comes and goes. The popular music of a few years ago, who plays it, you know? And if you do play it, that's called nostalgia. You don't play it because it's popular. Play it because it's nostalgic, which is something else entirely. And that's another problem. By the way, have you wondered, who is it who's buying all those LPs that they advertise every night on television? I'm just curious who they are. I mean, who can you imagine actually sending in money to get a cut of a Sammy Kay thing now in this day and age? But apparently there are people doing it, and I'm just curious who they are. Fascinating. To me, this is one of the most interesting unsung developments. Speaking of Straws in the Wind, this is one of the curious unsung developments in our time. Our time meaning this moment now, in this time, in many, many years. In fact, do you know that those so-called nostalgic records, which are really just collections of old outmoded hits, and even many of them are not even hits. They just take all the old junk that they've got in their library that they own and just reissue it and call it, "Do you remember the priceless memory when you heard Sammy Kay sing?" Well, you know, priceless memory. This has become one of the biggest facets, if not the biggest, right now at this point in the music business. Did you know that, Al? It's a big, 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 fantastic moneymaker. So that must say something about us. I mean, anytime something gets as big as that and gets shakes this much green stuff out of a tree, they're putting their money where their mouth is. Or wherever, whatever it is that that demands the return of Chubby Checkers, but this is a fascinating development of our time, and I haven't seen much serious study on it. By the way, you know, speaking of serious study, I don't know why this is kind of a catch-all show here tonight, but just watch when the next time you read interviews or read reviews or read. And listen to commentaries. See how often you hear either stated directly or implied that the person who is being criticized or discussed is intellectually incapable of understanding the concepts that they themselves have done a work on. Just notice that. It's a very interesting development, and one that should be examined closely. Now, a few years ago, a critic would have said something relating to religion. It's quite, for example, it was very common for a critic to say, "Well, of course, being a Catholic, this guy writes for this reason because he's a Catholic." Just a way of putting you down or a way of explaining something. They don't do that much anymore. They don't say, "Well, he writes that way because he's Jewish." They don't say that anymore. That's disappeared. Now they will, but you still have to have an intolerance factor. It demands it. Your world demands it. So you will say, "Well, he writes that way because he's incapable of understanding the subtle things which you as a reader and me as a critic understand." Poor guy. This is a kind of intolerance which is very, very subtle and which is very powerful, because there's nothing a reader likes to feel better, more, enjoys more. All of us, we enjoy this. It's a feeling of innate superiority. I like to be told that we are superior to this guy. We don't want to be told that he's got a different view of it that could very well rock our view down to the foundations. We want to be told, "He is wrong. We are right. And the reason he is wrong is that basically he's just not as smart as we are." Now that's fascinating. Oh, yeah. And of course, that also then is tied up with the concept. And I hope I'm not boring you with these things, because this is something that's always interested writers and people who are really truly interested in the mind of man and the way man's attitudes change and his operating techniques change too. This is also connected with another growing interesting thing, which has been around for some time, and that is the belief in good guys and bad guys and right and wrong, which is absolutely immutable. In short, many people consider themselves, and you've seen these phrases grow out of our language recently, the beautiful people. It's a good example of that. Well, the term the beautiful people refers to people who are basically superior to the other people. And it's easy to find out. Just ask them. They'll let you know that they are. That the beautiful people concept is part and parcel of the same kind of thing that I'm trying to discuss here, which is a kind of intolerance. Beautiful people also implies that there must be the opposite. There must be the uglies. You agree with that? But beauty cannot exist without some measure of comparison. So if there are beautiful people, there have to be the uglies too. And another thing too that's interesting is part of this kind of intolerance is the growing phrase self-appointed. That's another phrase. So if a man writes something you agree with, he's a philosopher. If he writes something you do not agree with, he's a self-appointed philosopher. Which means, of course, that he just says it. Now, obviously, we know he isn't, because he would think if he were really a philosophical person and really had philosophical validity to his ideas, he would obviously agree with us, the true philosophers. So he's obviously a self-appointed philosopher. I'm not going to concede that he's one. He's a self-appointed philosopher. Well, as a matter of fact, all philosophers are self-appointed. I've never seen anyone officially designated a philosopher. Appointed this. You are herefore and henceforth a philosopher. But that's another kind of phraseology that masks an interesting, subtle type of intolerance, self-appointed. Also, earlier, a few years ago, that would be pseudo. Do you remember the good old days of the pseudo-liberal? You remember the days of the... pseudo means he's not a real one, like me, of course. Or like my friends, and like you, the reader. He's a fake one, and that's the pseudo-liberal, or the pseudo-conservative, whatever you happen to want to apply it to. But that word is not, and is no longer a valid word. In other words, words are part of the changing pattern of intolerance, too. And words come and go. Popular words come and go. For example, one of the most popular words that was used a few years ago, the N-word, was charisma. You remember all the charismatic Kennedys? The word charisma was very important. Now we don't even use that word any longer. You know what the word is today? Are you curious? If you want to, don't use the word charisma. My God, that's like saying hot diggity dog or 23 skidoo. The minute you use a word like that in conversation, everybody says, oh boy, oh wow, the 60s, chubby checker, oh wow. So the current word that you must learn, and I will tell you if you want to keep up with things, is panache. So anything that's of course, relevant is out. That's gone. Relevant is out. Relevant was about 3 years ago, so quit using that word. Any politicians that are listening, anytime you use the word relevant, you're using words that are as outmoded as, say, bebop. So the word relevant is no longer a word that is used. Panache is important. Because, you see, I think one of the reasons why relevant went out is because the word relevant had specific things attached to it. And ultimately, since those things became unpopular, the word relevant became unpopular. So relevant began to, you know, just be a drag, to use another outmoded term. It became real bad news, which is using another outmoded term. See, the concept of in and out, and that too is outmoded. But the concept of what is real and what is not real changes constantly. And so today, the word panache, which really refers only to style, since we're living in an age when most people are living two lives, the public life and the life they really live, style is more important than what you really do. I think this is one of the major things that most people hold against, say, Nixon. He has very little style. So naturally, the crimes that are attributed to his administration are much more heinous. Now, if he had real style, that would not be nearly as important. I mean it. I'm very serious. I'm not being political here, except in the ultimate sense. And I do believe that if... Because I remember when, of course, we can get political about these things, but I can remember past presidents, because they had great style. People dug them. Many of the things they did were forgiven, just sort of a little passing, oh, yeah, that's too bad that happened, but after all, everyone makes mistakes, and we went on, even though they were catastrophic. Most important being Bay of Pigs, a fantastic boo-boo. But, you know, it's one of those things, and you just go right on. So panache is part of that. That's a word that is used today, which means even more than charisma, because you don't have to have charisma to have panache. It's even sneakier. So if you want to look, you want to use that word, just look it up. It's P-A-N-A-C-H-E, panache. And it's a kind of a good word. You just throw that in occasionally. Say, oh, this bagel has panache. And people know that you're really right on top of it. Because you've combined two in things very, very nicely. And the two in things just sort of, you know, mold themselves into one nice, neat package, and that package includes you and your subsequent reputation to those around you. Panache. Try saying it. Al, say it. I haven't heard you use it. Panache. Jerry? That's very good. Very good. Very good. Panache. Of course, it's always assumed that the speaker has it, too, or else he wouldn't be using the phrase. That's part of the day. We're living in the age of the super ego. Have you noticed that we no longer have stars and things either? Everything is hypercharged. And we have future superstars, which is an unbelievable contradiction in terms. I keep reading in the sport page, yes, Charlie Lefty Watanabe, signed by the Tidewater Club, has all the earmarks of a future superstar. Well, that's like it is announced that Irving Wallace is penning another bestseller for next year. Which, in other words, it's an accepted fact. It's the minute he signed, he is a superstar. Well, what is a superstar? What is the difference between a superstar and a star? Well, there's one rule of thumb. A superstar is somebody you won't hear damn much about next season. A superstar. A star is somebody who will go on and on and be legitimately that. A superstar. Is really the product of publicity, not the product of batting average. Will eventually, of course, quietly sink in the West after the $200 million bonus has been paid and spent. But this is a. Of course, we're living in the age where publicity itself is more important than the object which is under view. Rock groups are very much in this bag. But millions of people will just flip over every rock group that comes along. It's you know, it's the burning bush. It's, oh, my God, the truth has finally been revealed. And 2 months later, if you ask them what happened to the records of that group, which they couldn't hardly wait to get, they look at you as though, well, what do you mean? Who? Oh, well, yeah, but now, have you heard the so-and-so? And then they go on to, nobody will really discuss their past failures. But there's no such thing as a failure, really. It's their past fads. Stick around long enough, and any of your past fads will be resurrected by the agency that owns them, William Morris or BMI or whoever it is, and it'll come back. Although it's not really considered as with it to play the actual Chubby Checker records, than to play the camp Chubby Checker, and that, by the way, is another phrase. I know all about it. It's out. But it does have a certain validity. That it's not as hip today to play the real Chubby Checker records or the Bill Haley records as to play the nostalgic collection of Chubby Checker records. Very important distinction. Very important, because if you pull out the real Chubby Checker records, it means you're a true believer. If you pull out the collection, that means you're just kind of a really withered student of American folk nostalgia. And so keep the real thing hidden. You see what I'm saying here, Al? Now, like your grandmother owning a Tiffany lamp is nowhere near as hip as, say, that guy down the street with the pink shirt and the tinfoil shoes who pays $700 to buy a Tiffany lamp. So there's a great difference between the actuality and, in a sense, the mythical dream, which is, wouldn't it be just groovy? We've done our entire living room. Vicki and I have done it entirely in neo-Victorian. Well, that's another world, and has to be accepted as such. That's the world of the panache and the instant fad. Nothing is worse than to find your house done completely in, we just did it in early Carol Lombard, and then to find that has gone out of style. And then you've got all, 5,000 pounds of old furniture around, which you paid fantastic prices for, and what has come in is late Ann Sheridan. These are kind of dull discussions. You agree? This is a curiously no, not really, because it's part of the world. I agree, Al. You being an engineer, you're beyond that. You live in the world of attenuators and Kirchhoff's law, which is unchanging. The grid drive that is needed on a certain type of tube remains constant. It is not a vagary of fads, although that world is beginning to be very faddish too. Yes, the world of high fidelity has become very faddish, and names come and go. The faddish name becomes very popular, and this is also a part of it. Certainly automobiles have gone that way a long time ago when they discovered that the kind of engine you use is not nearly as important as the kind of ads you do. The style that is done with. I notice one car now has come out with the denim upholstery, relating to the whole blue jean. It's kind of sad because denim is getting to be a little bit out. I think the wet look upholstery would be a little more with it. But that's the way it is. Often the assembly line can't quite keep up with the current fad. Incidentally, I think it would be kind of great if American Motors came out with a new two-seater panache, because of that also has a certain foreign car connotation, panache. We all know of the Lotus Elan, if you know anything about that. There's no reason why we can't do it, tit for tat, as Edward Lear once said when referring to a bird. But again, it's all part of the world that we've got to have to take into account with. Now, take, for example, if you notice our newspapers come and go, too. They're popular. Today, it's very hip among certain circles to totally put down the Village Voice. And it's kind of with it to be seen in certain circles carrying the Daily News. And, it's kind of neo-Jimmy Breslinism, Third Avenue loudmouth type thing. So this this things come and go, so you gotta stay with it. And you, as a human being, unfortunately, your lifespan is 70 years, which means that 70 years you're going to see many things move in and out. And as they move in and out, you either decide that you're going to be part of that vast pinball game of the fad, and either you can choose to play a bumper. You can be the bumper in a pinball game, or you can be the ball. And both of them, you know what the bumper is. On the other hand, the most unpopular one of all, and unfortunately I'm afraid that's what my role in life has been, and I didn't choose it, it's just my nature, I'm the tilt sign. The tilt sign in the vast pinball game of life is not going to be popular either by the bumper. He's not going to be applauded by the bumper, nor by the ball. But he remains adamant. The tilt sign keeps coming up. Sometimes the bumpers are wrong, at which point the tilt sign will go off. Sometimes the ball is wrong, at which point the tilt sign goes off. He is impartial, as impartial as a machine can be. But that does not ensure popularity. No way. There's never been a popular tilt sign. You agree? And don't think for a minute that Voltaire was ever popular in his time. He was notorious. And then there's a big difference between notoriety and popularity. A great world of difference. And it all often has to do with how truthful you really are. I mean, you go to a George Plimpton cocktail party and you say, I think Kurt Vonnegut is a drag, you're going to go down the chute so fast that you won't know what hit you. So if you ever really tell the truth, you're liable to be in trouble. So you learn to suppress this thing. And then, in fact, even better, you learn to like everything that's popular. That's the most interesting state of mind to get into. So anything that is loudly proclaimed in your time, you automatically dig it. No way. No matter even if it causes you to have rashes between your shoulder blades, you dig it all the way. I know a girl, for example, who's got problems in that department, and she's got an entire closet filled with vinyl clothes because she went heavily into the vinyl. Remember when vinyl was big? Hey, by the way, speaking of popularity, you remember a couple of years ago when everybody was talking about the paper dresses and the paper shirts and the disposable pants? And they even had it on the news all over the place with these stores they opened up in Los Angeles. Whatever happened to that? Now guys named Pucci are coming and saying, oh, there's a mysterious new development. People are beginning to appreciate wool, and they are beginning to appreciate the beauties of true cotton now. And they're also beginning to understand that linen is also beautiful. I have designed a scarf. It's not a bad imitation, isn't it? But you're going to understand that ultimately we are all actors on the vast stage. Well, are we? Some guys are just spear carriers. Others are out there in front yelling into the PA system. So, you got to... Yes, it's a very surprising thing has hit the fashion world. It's called cotton. And... The eyes and the ears of the world are upon you. Do you have a feeling that your life is being recorded on grainy 8mm film, handheld? And there's a madman who's working the splicing machine. You have that feeling? And the cuts are absolutely rotten. Worst editing of all. I mean, my God, so much dull stuff is left in, and the good stuff seems to have... this gets complex. We don't want to get complex here in the radio, do we? Of course not. Because it's very in today to believe that the radio is incapable of an intellectual comment. Only television. Have you noticed, by the way, speaking of a current fad, every television newscast now has a guy who looks exactly like... There must be at least 15 shallots working the business. The newest thing is to have a guy who makes wry comments about pastrami contests and stuff like that. Wears great big glasses and has a gigantic mustache. Ah, but that will pass too. That will pass as quickly as it came. Yes, it'll go the way of Haywood Hale Bruin Jr. Where is he today? Each man has to play to court his own game. Play it your own game, friend. And that's another thing that's gone out, doing your own thing, because we discovered very quickly doing your own thing can be dangerous. Because the minute you start doing your own thing, your life will be out of style. No way. You can't do that. The thing to do is to have panache, friends, right at this minute of time. Panache. And plenty of it. And you can easily get panache. Just read New York Magazine enough. Work the anagrams, and you'll have panache. For a while, it is. WOR New York. Next, John Wingate and Nightbeat.
Thanks, Gene. And good morning. John Wingate. Here is Richard Givens on debt collection. Regional Director of the New York Office of the Federal Trade Commission. You ever been in debt?
Well, as a matter of fact, I did once get a credit card in which I found that I had been given a finance charge, although I thought I had paid the bill on time. So as a result of that, I tore up that card and I decided not to sign ever again a retail installment credit agreement. Now, I'm not saying, John, that everybody should do that. That was just my personal reaction to what happened.
Have you ever been dunned for a bad debt? Probably so. All of us have at one time or another. Tonight, the Regional Director of the Federal Trade Commission on Night Beat. I'm John Wingate. Wingate's Night Beat. Ever been in debt, and that probably includes all of you and all of me. Richard Givens will tell you about debt collection and some of the schlocky or hack methods used to collect debts. I assume we've all been in debt at one time or another and may go in again. Later, Martin Nolan, New York Magazine writer. More important, Washington Bureau chief for the Boston Globe. On Watergate and on what he calls Mario Biaggi's Watergate. And then, Roger Karras. Often you've seen him on The Carson Show, The Cabot Show, wildlife expert.